Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We will talk a lot today about the expanding searches on the subways and buses and commuter rails, and the debate is certainly on over the implications of this policy for our democracy as well as for our security. Why random searches? Why not focus on those who look suspicious or look like, dare we say it, the Middle Eastern or South Asian Islamists who have been responsible for most of the attacks? Are the searches constitutional? When was the last time you read the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution? We'll read that to you in a little while this morning. We will talk to Norman Siegel, who's running for New York City Public Advocate, who opposes the searches policy. We'll talk to a guest from the Manhattan Institute who supports them, named R.P. Eddy. We'll take a lot of your phone calls in our Democracy Wonk Summer Dialogue Series call in today. We'll devote that to the question of the searches and see where we go from there. Norman Siegel is due any minute. Norman Siegel, running for public advocate. He's the former head of the New York Civil Liberties Union as well, and the New York Civil Liberties Union is expected to file suit against the policy this week. But first, let's talk to somebody who supports it. He is R.P. Eddy, Senior Fellow for Counterterrorism at the conservative think tank, the Manhattan Institute. R.P. Eddy, welcome to WNYC.
Pleasure to be here. How are you?
Good. Tell us basically if you're for the searches as they're being implemented by the NYPD and the MTA. Do they have the policy right, in your opinion?
Well, they do. And you mentioned the Fourth Amendment. This is not a question of rights. This is not a question of unreasonable search. This is a question of doing what's smart and being cautious. And there's a whole number of reasons why the way these searches are set up, that there's really no question about their legality. And it's kind of a moot point. I'm surprised to hear that people are concerned about it.
Well, let me read you the Fourth Amendment. It says, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized."
Right, I've heard of it before and I've read it. But it's decidedly not a violation of the Fourth Amendment. The whole concept of searching, for example, in airports has already been accepted by the country as a whole and is not protested by challenged by groups like the ACLU. The reason that these searches are legal, and which is different than why they're smart, is that they are not based on racial profiling and that they're voluntary. If you don't want to ride the subway, you don't have to be searched. Riding the subway in New York City, like riding an airplane, like driving on a highway, is a privilege, not a right. And one of the costs of that privilege is the admission that you are liable to be searched.
It may not be a right, but it is a necessity for most people.
It certainly is.
People can choose not to fly, but they can't choose in the same way not to ride a bus or a subway to get to work.
Well,
in so many cases,
I'm not sure. Actually, air travel is necessary to this country. Certain people can choose not to fly. Certain people can't. Certain cargo can't. But back on the subject of the subway, yes, people have to take the subway and the buses, or the city shuts down. And that's why we need the random searches. That is not an argument against the random searches.
Here's the New York Civil Liberties Union statement on this. And it begins, "All New Yorkers rely on public transportation, and we all want them to be safe and secure as we go about our daily activities. We're entitled to move freely around the city without being worried about being searched by the police. The NYPD can and should investigate any suspicious activity, but the Fourth Amendment prohibits police from conducting searches where there is no suspicion of criminal activity." So you're saying that's refuted on its face by the fact that they already do it with the sanction of the courts in airports. There are already sobriety checkpoints on the roads, things like
right.
that.
It's not just a matter of the precedent, and you listed the most obvious ones. It's a matter of the fact that what trumps sort of all these issues is what's smart for the subway system to keep the city moving and keep the city safe. And a random, non-profiled search that's voluntary is not an abrogation of rights. If we want to have the debate, that's fine. But more importantly, let's have the debate on how we keep the city safe while we maintain rights. And that's why we shouldn't profile, for example. Profiling is a very bad idea, not just because it is an abrogation of rights, but because it's not smart. If we begin profiling and saying, we're looking for young Arab men, we are ignoring the fact that, for example, one of the bombers in the UK was Jamaican, that Richard Reed was not really Arab-looking, if you remember the shoe bomber.
Yeah.
Jose Padilla was a Latin American. And there actually were two terrorists arrested in Israel who looked extraordinarily Swedish, because they were, who were down there working with Hamas to blow up Israeli
right.
targets.
Although this, and of course this argument doesn't come from the Civil Liberties Union, it comes more from the right, but some people will say that randomness is wrong precisely because it makes police less likely to find a terrorist and is therefore absurd on its face, that there is a clear pattern of who's bombing Western mass transit, and like it or not, with a few exceptions, they are overwhelmingly young Muslim males of Middle Eastern or South Asian origin or descent. And so these critics say, you know, stopping some grandma in Harlem or the Upper East Side because she's 12th in line while letting someone who fits the profile go unchecked doesn't make statistical sense.
Well, there is an absurdity to that. We've all seen that in the airports, and it is a bit absurd. But the reality is we have a very different sort of security profile here than we do in Britain, or than they had in Britain. If there is an attack on a subway in the United States, it's likely to be longer planned. It's likely to have a lot more moving parts to it, probably more lethal, unfortunately. And the reason is the U.S. is more of a marquee target even than Britain. So the operation here would be taken even more seriously by the people who take it out, which means they're more likely to continue to try to find Western-looking people to carry the attack out. That's all hypothesis, but I think it's a pretty smart point of view. If we start, I'm not saying that we should be pulling over the 85-year-old grandmother and searching her bag and ignoring the very sort of, you know, Arab-looking young men because the profiles happen to be out there, but we should be making sure we're not ignoring the other young men who are not Arab-looking. There is a profile that's worth looking at, and it doesn't have to do with race. It has to do with age and behavior and the bulkiness of the clothing, the bulkiness of the bag, et cetera, et cetera. But the other thing to remember,
of course, behavior, if you're looking at somebody's behavior, then it's not exactly profiling. Then you have an individual acting suspiciously.
Well, there's a behavior profile. And there's a behavior profile that police use when they pull you over for drunk driving, as there can be when they begin to search you as you're approaching a subway. There are certain behaviors that we've seen time and time again that suicide bombers display before they attack a target. And then they become antsy, they look around furtively, they move their hands rapidly, they wear, you know, baggy, bulky clothing. They are often young men, almost always, in the kind of attacks we're talking about. But they're not always Arab men. But, you know.
What do you think about the awful tragedy of the killing in England of somebody who was an innocent bystander, but he fit the profile of somebody wearing bulky clothing on a summer's day, and so plainclothes policemen started to run him down. They say he didn't stop when ordered to stop, though witnesses say they didn't hear any command to stop. And then because they suspected him of being prepared to engage in an imminent terrorist attack, even though they had him down on the ground, they shot him in the head five times and obviously killed him.
Yeah, it's a horrible, unspeakable tragedy, and I hope we have nothing like that in this city or, again, anywhere. But the other side of the coin is, think about the challenge of these police officers, particularly in London, where they had, you know, an attack and an attempt attack right on top of one another. And this guy fit the profile and wasn't, as they claim, responding to their heaves to stop. Police in this city have a really hard time trying to figure out how they should respond to that situation. And we've talked about this for years. Should they unleather their gun and shoot someone who looks suspicious just to find out later that it's a tourist with an iPod wire sticking out of his hands who doesn't speak English? It's a horrible dilemma for these guys. Keep the city safe, but also make sure you don't shoot the wrong guy. You know, I wasn't in Britain when that happened. I haven't read extensively about it. It sounds like a massive mistake was made, and I don't think we should expect the same from the NYPD.
What about the use, and you talked about, you know, on the one hand you think this is a good policy because it's legal, on the other hand it's a good policy because it's smart. Is it smart? There are so many ways to get into subway stops, for example, and just so many subway stops, so many of which are a few blocks away, depending on where you are, that the number of entrances that are going to have the random searching couldn't possibly stop a determined suicide bomber from getting into the system, could it?
Unfortunately, you're right. But let's start from the baseline that the point you make is sort of true of all society. There are certain targets in this society that are extraordinarily vulnerable, but also extraordinarily critical. The subway is a very good example. An attack on a subway does more damage to the city than, say, an attack on a shopping mall, because everyone will be hesitant to use the subway, less will be on the subway, the city will become more congested. That's a bad thing for commerce, bad thing for the city. You know, it's not quite as devastating to the city as an attack, as I said, on a shopping mall. As much as it's hard to protect the subway entirely, what we're talking about here is a hardening procedure. We're trying to make the subway safer, but it's also entirely a deterrent measure. If the bad guys know that there's a likelihood that they'll be searched or there's a random search going on as they approach the subway, they'll try and hit another target. And if they hit another target, unfortunately, what we're saying is that's better than hitting the subway right now. And there's also, this is not just a vulnerability-based piece of security. This is a threat-based piece of security. We know that since there were attacks in London, it's likely that groups here connected to those groups or not, and I'd say they probably aren't, which is another discussion, would think that they should act sympathetically and try and attack the subways here as well in a sort of a copycat style. So there's actual, even if there's not real intelligence of a threat to a subway, it's intelligent to think we should try and protect the subways right now.
Why do you think they wouldn't be connected groups? There's some reporting that says the London attacks were carried out by people reporting back in some way to Al-Qaeda, central, such as it is at this point, and that it carried out the hallmarks, as did the Egypt attacks, of the, you know, multiple spectacular bombings on a target with political and economic impact.
Yeah, well, since 9/11, there's been a trend of terrorism where we've seen terrorist attacks. I'm talking about Madrid, I'm talking about Istanbul, I'm talking about Bali, and I'm now talking about London, where the terrorists actually lived in the countries they attacked. Very different than what we're used to, right? 9/11, they flew in here and flew around here and killed us. Mm-hmm. In these countries, these people were homegrown terrorists, homegrown jihadists. So that's a trend that's happening, and it's not a shock to imagine why that's happening. As you described, Al-Qaeda Central's on the run, they're dispersed, they're not able to generate the massive attacks. Did they carry out the Egypt attack? It is more likely they did than the London attack. Even though there's reporting of some of the London bombers went to Pakistan, may have met with some imams, they lived in London their whole lives. They had to procure the explosives themselves, they financed it themselves, and they planted it themselves. So just if they had some spiritual support from overseas does not mean that this is a vast global conspiracy. And in fact, it gives those people more credit and more gravity, if you will. Credit's not the right word. More gravity than they deserve. These are lone jihadists. They're acting on their own. And it's an act of nihilism. It's not really an act of political terror. And that's a very different dynamic than we're used to. And it also requires different solutions. That kind of circles back to where we are now.
Norman Siegel, former head of the New York Civil Liberties Union and candidate for public advocate, is going to be our next guest. In 30 seconds, as we finish up with R.P. Eddy, senior fellow for counterterrorism at the Manhattan Institute, just tell us real quick, do you think we're going to wind up with situations where police in these subway searches find illegal guns or illegal drugs and prosecute people over that?
If you're stupid enough to let a cop randomly search your bag and you're carrying a pistol, then you ought to go to prison for stupidity, let alone the illegal possession of a handgun. I don't think we're going to see a lot of that. But the police can't turn a blind eye to it either.
And 15 seconds, what about IDs? I heard that they may be asking people for IDs, which might have immigration and other implications.
Well, I haven't heard that, and it's a very different question. And when we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But right now, it's
as far as you know, that's not going to happen.
As far as I know, that's not going to happen.
Okay. R.P. Eddy, thanks a lot for coming on with us. I appreciate it. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Norman Siegel's vantage point on this next.